and a sure success.
Gentlemen, to the fabulous Vinny Eastwood show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, Rush 89 FM in Hamilton. You can also check out all the previous shows that we have done at the VinnyEastwoodShow.com radio archives, which should be pretty informative if you haven't actually listened to the show as yet. And welcome to all the new listeners. In New Zealand and America and around the world, we've got a treat for you today. Got two guests, hopefully, because we've been having a difficulty connecting New Zealand landlines for some reason. Who knows? Maybe SIS is messing with us. Nah, I doubt it. We've got Catherine Delahunty from the Green Party coming up for our first hour guest as a Kiwi collaborator. And second hour, it would be my distinct pleasure to welcome Jason Burmis, the maker of Loose Change, the most watched movie on the net, pretty much, about as viral as you can get. Speaking of viral, article just come out on gorillamedia.co.nz that if you had swine flu, you now have super immunity. That's right. UK researchers have made an interesting discovery concerning swine flu, according to the report which was published in the Journal of Experimental Medicine. People who have had the H1N1 influenza virus and recovered now have a type of super immunity that is able to fend off many different viruses, they say. It could be possibly because of the fact that the so-called swine flu had a bunch of different strains spliced into it. And when I say spliced, I don't mean this just happened in the natural environment by accident. It's called biological engineering, you know, man-made virus. It had a strain of human virus, two strains of swine flu in it, and one strain of avian flu, and it was all packed into the one. Now, I don't know if any of you are familiar at all with how viruses work, but usually one strain will survive, and that's it. You don't have four strains all coming together, you know, like human flu, swine flu, and avian flu just got together and said, hey, you know what we could do together, boys? You know, let's conspire against the human race and let's release ourselves all together, you know, all at once. They'll never be able to stand before us. But, of course, we could stand before them because nobody was stupid enough to take the massive swine flu shots because of people like Jane Burgermeister, who exposed the fact that it was all a huge scam designed to spread the virus even further. Well, thank goodness for that. And now that if you have this fake virus, you've now got fake super immunity. Oh, and also, Forbes as well has just said that the United States has more oil in the ground than the whole of the Middle East put together. What have we been telling you? You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the VinnyEastwoodShow.com, and we'll be right back momentarily. Ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show. Technical difficulties have come us into a happy accident. We haven't been able to get our guest, Catherine Delahunty from the Green Party, on. So instead, we've got Jason Burmis on. Jason, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, mate, it's just such a pleasure. Now, you've been getting your own little studio together there, man. Is that right? You're going to be launching a new radio show?
Well, I'm trying to, man. To be honest, I had somebody offer me to do my radio show without what's known as a dedicated IP audio codec. I don't have ISDN here. I really couldn't afford it anyway. To get an ISDN line is like $1,500, and then you have to pay by the bandwidth. So I need something like a Comrex access unit or an IP Bridget unit, and those run between $1,600 and $3,000. This person said that they could do it with a USB mixing board, which I'm using right now, and my little condenser microphone. But then they backed out. They basically said that they couldn't produce a five-day-a-week program. So right now, really what I'm doing is I'm using my little editing bay I have now, a new editing bay that I got through these donations, and just doing video blogs. I put one up yesterday called The Body Says Hands Off, involving Jesse Ventura and his class action lawsuit against the TSA and Homeland Security. So I'm going to continue to do the little video blogging. I'm going to continue to do radio shows like this one. And I'm currently editing a new film that I really can't talk about because it hasn't been greenlit yet. But even if it doesn't get greenlit, I'm sure I'm going to do it independently on a lower budget.
Always good to make sure you keep him busy.
trying to.
Hey, well, the fight against the New World Order just doesn't stop, does it? Now, in your early days, man, I mean, before you actually did Loose Change, what really woke you up to 9/11 possibly being an inside job?
Well, here's the story. I guess that I had my questions on the first day. I remember being woken up. I live in New York, but it's upstate New York, but I went to school with a bunch of Long Island kids and city kids, and my roommate came into the room, and I had worked a late Monday night, a late night pizza guy. I worked till about 2-3 in the morning, so didn't go to bed till 5 or 6 a.m. that day. About 11:30, my roommate comes in, wakes me up, and says, the Twin Towers are gone. They're gone. I'm like, what are you talking about? They're gone. You know, it's just an impossibility in my mind that the Twin Towers could possibly be gone. I'd been inside them as a kid. I'd gone on field trips. Every time I go to the city and walk by them, you literally get vertigo when you would look up at them. I'd go and visit my great aunt out in Brooklyn, and you could see the towers almost anywhere. So it really didn't compute. So I go downstairs and I start watching this thing. And the first thing I think is, well, they must have blew these buildings up. There's no way they could have fallen that way. But, I fell into all the propaganda. This was really the birth of the 24-hour news network. Although you did have CNN and MSNBC, they weren't that popular at the time. And really every network had turned into a news network, whether it was MTV, VH1, ESPN, they were all just running the news. So I kind of became captivated with this and really started following politics more closely. A couple months in, I start thinking to myself, man, they're really hyping this war with Iraq, and it doesn't seem like they had anything to do with it, even by mainstream accounts, So I started to have some doubt there, but I thought to myself, we're the United States of America, we're doing the right thing, and maybe they want to go after Iraq because not only is it the second largest oil supply in the world, and they're saying that Saudi Arabia did this, and remember, Saudi Arabia is the number one. Maybe they need their oil, and it's a strategic point in the Middle East to take over. And perhaps after they took over the majority of the Middle East, you're talking Afghanistan, Iraq, even Iran, then maybe they could challenge Saudi Arabia. So that was my mindset at that point. A few more months roll by, and I'm watching Fox News in the morning, and I see my first, hint at 9/11 truth with Thierry Masson's book, Le Pentagate, being talked about with disgust on Fox and Friends. And I got to tell you, right off the bat, I'm thinking to myself, I'm in disgust. Man, these people will say anything's a conspiracy. Kind of went right over my head. But I still had my doubts that we were being told the full truth. So I go about 6 months after the attacks back to my old high school to play a men's night basketball game with some of my friends that had become teachers at the school and some of my old professors. So I'm playing ball, and I have to go use the restroom. So I go into my old locker room where I used to suit up for soccer games, basketball games, baseball games. And the school had been kind of redone. But I go to the urinal, and in the urinal, is a picture of Osama bin Laden's face, and it says Operation Enduring Freedom. And this just strikes me, you know, whether it's right or not, as the biggest piece of propaganda I have ever seen in my entire lifetime. This is a school, I graduated with 50 kids, okay? This is a school for 12-year-olds to 18-year-olds, very impressionable minds. And even when I was a younger kid and I was doing duck and cover drills because of the threat of a nuclear attack from the Russians, you know, I never peed on Gorbachev. I never saw this kind of propaganda. So right then and there, something clicked in my brain and I said, you know what? I better make sure that we weren't involved in this. So I went home that night, and all I was looking for was a timeline based on September 11th of that day, and I came across a website called www.911timeline.net. Now, this is not the famous timeline that goes through all of 9/11. This is really a rather early one by Mark R. Elsis that really just took you from 12 a.m. that day to 12 a.m. the next day. And it was 41 pages long, and there was just so many different anomalies. And one of the first things I'm looking at is that these flights combined are at less than 30% capacity. That put up huge red flags. I start finding out that we went to Afghanistan in the summer before and gave them $40 million in farmers' aid. And Colin Powell said, you know, we can come in and do this pipeline and give you basically pave your streets with gold, or we can pave your streets with bombs, and so on. So I really started my research from there. I started to get into the file share networks like Kazaa and Morpheus. Those were the big ones at the time. They were basically Napster for videos, and started downloading basically clips from 9/11 live newscasts that weren't really around. And really from there, it snowballed into me finding Alex Jones's Road to Tyranny, his work. Before DVD-Rs were popular, I was one of the first guys out there just burning CDRs of other people's work and handing them out to people and having them watch it on their computer. And, you know, I just kind of fell into this loose change thing in 2004 by chance, by luck, really. And from there, I've just been making films and trying to warn people about what's really going on and talking about what Peter Dale Scott calls parapolitics, you know, the politics that are behind the scenes, the ones that are really the driving engine for what's going on in the world today.
Well, Jason, I don't know where to start. I don't know where to start, Jason, but I'm a big fan of yours, and you actually were instrumental in waking me up in 2005. I saw Loose Change here. It happened to be on New Zealand TV somehow, just on a back station, you could say. At about 1 o'clock in the morning, I was half asleep and I was flicking through and I saw a review of Loose Change and I was kind of like, wow, you know, what is this stuff? And was never really a conspiracy theorist in the cliche sense of the word, but I suppose it got me thinking. And, you know, after a few late nights on the internet, I was kind of like, yeah, there's, like you say, a lot of anomalies here, and found out about Operation Northwoods. And I suppose the second film I watched was 9/11, The Road to Tyranny also, which just delves into, as you know, some in typical Jones style, some wider issues going on, secret societies, and going back to Nero, and, you know, just like, wow. So I had to start from scratch, basically. But I get the feeling, I get the sense, Jason, that you weren't any ordinary fluoride head, you know, 10 years prior. You know, you're always a thinking person. And I mean, is there any background to... I mean, your whole inquisitive.
You know, I always did well in high school. I was always really captivated by history, I guess you could say. I think I'm kind of a lucky guy. You know, New York State school system is one of the best in the country. And you kind of grow up like, you know, we used to go to Roosevelt's estate. We went to the Vanderbilt estate. So I always had this, I guess, itch for history. But at the same time, I never really trusted my government fully. You know, I was one of those guys back in the 90s reading, you know, the Majestic 12 documents and really anything I could get my hands on the web. But I never imagined that my government would participate in the murder of 3,000 people just to go into the Middle East and kill millions more, basically for imperial domination. And, you know, I guess my eyes hadn't been opened that wide, but I certainly didn't discount that they could pull off some evil stuff. And as far as a thinking person, man, I guess so. But at the same time, you know, my favorite show is The Simpsons. I haven't missed an episode in the last 20 plus years. I'm into sports, big UFC MMA fan, and a huge Knicks fan. Glad that they're at least at 500, a little bit more this year. And but at the same time, I realized that in order to have those types of luxuries, in order to be able to sit back and bask in entertainment or bask in sports, you have to know what's going on in the world. And you have to take an active role in what's going on in the world. And remember, you know, 10 years ago, I'm in my early 20s. You know, I came around to this stuff around 22. I'm still in draft age. I'm still looking at, I almost joined the military right after 9/11. I had actually almost joined the National Guard with my best friend, Jason D'Onofrio. And the only reason I didn't join it, and this was back in 99, is because my stepfather was a Marine and he just kept kicking the recruiters out and hanging up on them on the phone. And thank God that I didn't, you know, join the military, because they tell you, you know, 2 weeks a year, 1 weekend a month, we're going to pay for your college, everything's gravy. Well, my friend ended up having to go to Iraq. As far as I knew, the National Guard was supposed to be used for state business, for local business. And he had to spend 6 months out there, and he was blown up in a tank, lost his hearing in one side of his ear. Very traumatic experience for him. I remember reading letters from him when he would when he was out in Iraq and Ahmadi and all these different places. And I just thank the Lord that that didn't have to be me. And I just want to reach out to people my age, younger. I want to make people know that this is something that you can take part in, even if you're a 14-year-old kid, an 18-year-old young man, a 55-year-old on the verge of being a senior. Anyone can get involved in a real issue and have an effect on your neighbors, your family members, humanity in general, as long as you believe you can. And then you take the tools that you possess or are given to you or presented to you and share them with the world. And I've always been one of those guys that says, hey, you can make it happen. A lot of people throughout my entire life in varying situations have always said, you can't do that. You're not going to be able to do that. You can't achieve this. And I just take that as a challenge. And I think a lot of people absorb those things and they start to believe them. And then their actions end up basically becoming what they've been told. You know, they do what they're told. And I'm telling you that, you know, look at me. I was a, you know, 20-something year old pizza guy, didn't graduate college. I'm a beauty school dropout. And I was able to become part of the largest internet film in history and really change global politics out there. You look at Fujita, you know, the second guy in parliament in Japan, and loose change is what brought him around. By the fifth anniversary of 9/11, our film was airing in 15 separate countries on the History Channel, including Australia and New Zealand and Israel and Pakistan. All these separate venues were showing a movie that was essentially taboo and being attacked in this country by the likes of USA Today, CNN, MSNBC, US Business Weekly, Time Magazine, you name it. And
everyone needs enemies.
People the mainstream sells all over you guys here too. I mean, well, not so much these days. It's not in vogue at the moment. But whenever it comes time to hate the conspiracy theorists, whenever we gain traction, you know, they're all trying to crucify us in the media here too. So there's nothing really different about that. But like you say, we've all got to find our personal power and realize we're not slaves. We're just as effective as, you know, the David Rockefellers and Rothschilds out there if we want to be. And you've proven that, and you've done it, and that's a credit to you. But like you say, anyone can do it. You know, we've all been empowered with our intellect and abilities, wherever we think they may come from. But at the end of the day, it just comes down to activating yourself, doesn't it? It comes down to saying, hey, there are some human universals that need protecting, regardless if we like to watch NASCAR or football or whatever. There are some base operating principles here that need to be agreed on, and then we can move forward from there and enjoy diversity at the same time. And I'm like you too. I've got a foot in each door. I kind of live a half zombie life with zombie friends, so to speak, and then half in this whole paradigm that we're trying to expose. It's kind of strange, isn't it? Because you find yourself as an in-between, being an in-between somehow, and
Yes, it is. I guess.
Like, yeah, you're living a double agent life, you know?
Triple agent.
I wouldn't go that far because, all right, before Loose Change, when I was just that guy, you know, on the bus, on my way to my graphic design job at 7 in the morning, and I was talking to the guy in the seat next to me, and he was kind of nodding his head, but thinking I was crazy, I still handed him that CD. And he still came to me 2 days later and said, wow, you know, that was some pretty powerful information. I don't know if I agree with everything you've told me, but you've definitely opened up my mind. I had friends, you know, again, before Loose Change came out, violently tell me, look, I never want to hear this again. I won't be able to hang out with you. Certain family met my stepfather. I mean, he told me that he was just worried that I was going to end up being that crazy guy in my bedroom with a jar full of ears and formaldehyde. I said, like, what the hell are you talking about, man? I'm talking about real facts here. I'm trying to show you videos proving my point. I mean, actual news footage from, you know, the mainstream media, and you won't even look at it, and you're comparing me to somebody who's going to have an ear collection. I mean, that is the mentality.
That's mind control. That's propaganda.
Absolutely. But after Loose Change, you forget about it. I got calls from all over. Friends I hadn't seen in years are asking me for my autograph on the DVD. Even if they didn't agree with me, they would respectfully disagree. They would at least take a look at my information. And even today, you know, I have a lot of friends that work in bars. You know, I'm in a little college town here. And we just last night, you know, I was telling my bartender buddy about what Jesse Ventura was doing with the TSA and Homeland Security and how it was probably triggered by the fact that Homeland Security put pressure on Time Warner Cable to remove the police state episode, not only from the airwaves, but from DVR boxes. And someone looks at that. Why would they remove that from a DVR box? And then I tell them how they went to a FEMA facility where they call it a residential area, but everybody's locked in. And, you know, you get those minds going. And I've even lectured up at the college here several different times in front of audiences of over 200. I've lectured in front of Princeton University. I don't look at it so much as a zombie style life because that's definitely not my only motivation. While I'm doing work here in my little studio or whatever, and I'm editing something together, or I'm coming up with my next video blog, CNN's in the background, Fox News is in the background, I want to keep my pulse on mainstream society so I can share it with the rest of my family and friends.
That sounds about right. You got to basically keep one foot in the mud if you want to help drag other people through it to the other side to stable ground. Our very special guest, ladies and gentlemen, is Jason Burmis, and we'll be right back momentarily. Look at me, driving and I won't stop. And welcome back. Welcome back to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio and Rush 89 FM in Hamilton in New Zealand. Jason, I thought I'd try and make you laugh, mate. I've got a 9/11 joke if you might allow me to tell it to you.
No, oh, please don't, Vinny. Moving on here.
Well, you see, Dick Cheney celebrates 9/11 every year by going out and getting a whole bunch of presents for his family, and he rigs up a cardboard cutout of one of the towers in his lounge and wraps fairy lights around it, stuff like that. You know, it makes it all very festive. And one year they were sitting around the tower drinking eggnog, and the tower caught fire, but it didn't collapse.
Oh, such a surprise.
Yeah.
See, Vinny's dry enough to sort of soak up some of the Auckland humidity. It's like 90%+ humidity normally, but in his block it's about, I don't know, 30, 40.
Oh, it's ridiculous over here, man. Like, seriously, you can feel the heat passing through you like radio waves.
Well, you know, there's some videos out there on YouTube claiming to be me laughing about 9/11 with Kevin Smith of Clerks fame and Jay and Silent Bob fame. And it's not me. It's somebody, some other guest with him. I just found this podcast that he had put out where he called Loose Change effing riveting. And so, you know, we put a little blog out about it, and I included just a little excerpt of it. In my film, my latest film, Invisible Empire, which is really a bigger picture film, which takes on the terminology of the New World Order, and I believe defines what that term actually means, shows countless political officials, government officials, corporate leaders, CEOs, talking about this new world order. And, you know, anybody can go out there and twist your words, and I've seen it all, and I've heard it all. I get attacked constantly from, you know, people who think that I'm crazy. I get constantly attacked by Nazis. You name it, and they're out there to attack.
Troy from West Virginia. 9/11 is an inside jobby job.
A lot of people don't know what a big guy he is, but he was down at the G20 in Pittsburgh last summer when I was down there stalking me. And, I mean, he was hard to miss. He's like a 6'5" guy. He was rocking his signature Dodgers jersey. And the funny thing about that is the day that he came and confronted me and started following me around while I was actually interviewing the lead singer of Anti-Flag, Justin Sane, is that later on in the night, my buddy, he's in dental school out there, one of my fraternity brothers, and he had tickets to the final game of the season for the Pirates versus the Dodgers. And I'm assuming that's why Troy made the trek out there, not just to stalk the likes of myself, but to go to this game. And the Pirates were horrible that year, but they beat the Dodgers. And I felt really good about being there, watching the fireworks go off. And I immediately took a cab from that game as it ended to what you see in my video, G20 Police Brutality, where you just had these cops encircle an empty park, essentially, and attack college students. And it was one of the scariest things I've ever been a part of. My partner, Rob Dew, was arrested that day. In fact, he was arrested maybe 10 minutes after I walked up to him and said, "Hey, watch out, they're encircling everybody. I think they're about to arrest you."
Yeah, that was the scene with, like, barking dogs and helicopters and, like, Soviet-Russian-style broadcasts. And it looked wild. It looked crazy. I mean, it's pretty wild. A bit worse than what we had outside Condoleezza Rice's hotel here in Auckland. But, yeah, it's definitely up the ante over there, don't they?
I was right next to me, to the right of me, and I was really careful while I was taping. Luckily, I had a really small camera, but I was really careful to make sure that I always had one out. You know what I mean? That the police were only on three corners and that they weren't going to be able to encircle me. And this 125-pound kid couldn't have been more, wearing a peace flag on his back on a bicycle, starts, you know, getting beat up by these cops. They come over. They're like, "It's time to go. It's time to go." And they take their nightsticks and they start hitting his bicycle. So he jumps over and, you know, they start yelling at him, and he goes to run back and he's like, "Just let me get my bike." And he reaches down for the handlebar and the guy just cracks him in the knuckles, broke his hand, and then they sprayed the bear mace at him. And it was just, I'm just like, wow, I am 10 feet, you know, away from this poor kid that's wearing a peace flag that can't even get his bicycle without having his hand broken and then being assaulted with bear mace. What does that say about my country? It doesn't say good things, I can assure you of that.
Yeah, well, it never does. You know, we have this kind of, I don't know, it's a global system, you know, Jason. I mean, every single first world nation that speaks English now feels the full brunt of police state measures. And in New Zealand, we're now getting these things called the Search and Surveillance Bill passed, where police will be able to spy on you without a warrant for up to 3 days, break into your house, set up cameras, and just surveil you and have no oversight whatsoever. We've just had this new Supreme Court installed that operates with, get this, anonymous judges.
Lovely, lovely. Let's not accountable when they are deciding on humanity's freedom. Let's not hold them accountable. Let's not be able to point the fingers at the ones that are deciding policy. That's always a bad idea. Checks and balances are a bad thing, apparently.
Oh, totally, bro. Especially if you want to have a nice, peaceful, loving new world order. It'll be peaceful and loving, surprisingly enough, and everybody in the mass graves won't be putting up much of a fight, will they? You know, they'll just.
Well, you know, let's talk about this idea of a globalized society, of a new world order, for just a moment, because Zeitgeist Moving Forward, the third major release to the Zeitgeist films, has been released on the web this week, and I haven't watched the full thing, but I intend to watch all 3 hours of it. It's like 2 hours and 45 minutes. It does take cuts at people like myself who would dare to say that a new world order is a bad idea. And you can even, you know, Google Peter Joseph talks about the UN and the new world order. And, you know, he says that the UN is this despicable organization, but when he starts talking about the New World Order, he says, you know, first of all, he's completely wrong in where it originates from. He says, well, you know, H.G. Wells wrote this book called The New World Order, and people have twisted his words to mean some kind of a eugenics-based society, but that's not the truth at all. Anybody who's seen Invisible Empire knows that H.G. Wells came late to the party on an idea of a new world order. It could be even argued that Adam Weishaupt and his little crew from the Bavarian Illuminati wanted to centralize power and create this quote-unquote new world order. But we know that over 100 years ago, Samuel Zane Batten wrote a book called The New World Order, which was a book about centralized control, all but Christian centralized control. It had this kind of Christian beat throughout, but it was essentially this one world society where individuals work for the state and for the greater good of humanity. And, you know, even H.G. Wells realized in order to put that kind of an institution in place, and you can read it in the book or you can check it out in my film, that countless people would have to die fighting this new world order, many of them rather gallant and graceful people. Well, if we've got to kill all these gallant and graceful people, how valid is this world order going to be? And with things like Zeitgeist Addendum and this new incarnation of it, they're constantly talking about technology that's real, okay? I am all for getting the maglev trains out there. I am all for building a society that's based on wind and solar power and, you know, these technologies that could empower humanity. The problem is that the upper less than 1% who do control things already know about this technology, and they're not sharing it with the rest of us. And that is purposeful. And the thing that Zeitgeist never addresses is how do we get this powerful, centralized elite to share these technologies with the world in a society, apparently, where no one is going to have to work, and we're going to have this resource-based economy where computers decide what we are allowed to have and do. Now, anybody out there knows that, you know, computers are not completely autonomous. There's going to be somebody in the background programming these computers, going through the data sets, analyzing these computers. So really what I feel like is this is, you know, a new world order that's being sold to the commoner as some kind of a utopian society where it plays on our brain patterns that don't want to work. Like, these people think that we're just going to be lounging all day and that all the problems will go away once we don't have a barter system or a monetized economy. But I've got news for you. Unless you change the very nature of what the human being is, we are going to have things like jealousy. We are going to have things like greed. There's always going to be someone out there that wants to sleep with your wife. Okay, we're human.
The argument that they put across here is that there is no such thing as human nature, that everything's conditioning, right? You know, and they put across fairly convincing arguments in the film, right, to try and illustrate this kind of thing with examples from the past and the future and the present, blah, 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 blah. And what I find really interesting is the followers of Zeitgeist, and you know, I've made a video actually promoting the new Zeitgeist film because I think it's a good film, but I did have one extreme criticism of it was that they talked about the peak oil scam as the reason why, you know, we need this resource-based economy. And also there was the a section where they talked about detractors, you know, people who criticize Zeitgeist. And one of the people who's criticizing Zeitgeist, you know, is like this whole bunch of people jumping up and down going, death to the new world order, death to the new world order. And I thought to myself, man, that's really offensive to me. You know, and it's not because of the fact that they're making fun of, say, and it looked to me particularly like a dig at Alex Jones. It's not necessarily that really ticked me off. It's the fact that they do not want to allow any debate about their ideas. And that leads to a very, very dangerous predicament indeed, regardless of how nice the idea is. If you're unable to debate it, you're probably going to be taken over or coerced into some description of tyranny.
Absolutely. And, you know, I did see that section that you were talking about where people stand up in the theater And I do realize that Michael Rupert is a big part of this film. I enjoyed his movie Collapse. I don't happen to agree with it. I actually got to meet Rupert this September. I think it was on September 11th. I actually met him down in New York City just briefly. He didn't know who I was. I didn't introduce myself because he had attacked Loose Change as a piece of CIA propaganda. And since I was involved in the film, I can assure everybody out there the CIA had nothing to do with our movie, yet without contacting us, without giving us a call, without emailing us, he wrote this article that, you know, again, it's very well done, Central Intelligence Agency propaganda. So how much can I really believe from Rupert? And I think that's rather disappointing to a guy like me, because earlier I was talking about these things that had woken me up, and one of the first things that I had seen was Rupert's lecture called Truth and Lies on 9/11, and it really...
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, it was really done well. It showed you the links between intelligence agencies and big business and corporate America and the banking system, and it did it in a rather airtight fashion. And for him to come around and, you know, just refuse to talk about the control.
Keep going.
I'm sorry, I thought I dropped, guys. My bad. For him to talk about, you know, the controlled demolition being propaganda, or, you know, there's no possibility something else happened at the Pentagon, and for him to go on the attack against people like myself was extremely disheartening. And I can tell you just from what I've watched of this new Zeitgeist film that the production quality is amazing, and I am not in complete disagreement with everything in the film. In fact, years ago when the original Zeitgeist was out, you can check it out on YouTube, I interviewed Peter Joseph, and you know, I got along rather well with him, but as the interview tailed down and we kind of got into this New World Order conversation, we differed on opinions. And I offered him, after Addendum came out, to please do my radio show or to come on the Alex Jones show. And he refused, you know. And I got this snarky email from his female assistant that you see in some of these videos with Jacques Fresco, basically saying that the New World Order was a figment of my imagination and it didn't exist. And, you know, we're not in with that crowd. So I don't think he wants to debate some of the finer points. And as far as you go with nature versus nurture, nurture is a huge thing. I'm not here to say that the monetary system doesn't contribute to some of the greatest crimes humanity has ever seen. It absolutely does. It absolutely affects neighborhoods and people on their day-to-day lives. I live paycheck to paycheck. You know, I'm worried about paying my bills just this month. I just got a $400 electric bill because it's, you know, been snowing ridiculously out here and been, you know, it was like -7 earlier in the week. So I understand that, but there's also nature of human beings. You know, Ted Bundy didn't have a horrible home life. John Wayne Gacy had a family, and they still did horrific things to people. And you're just going to see that because, again, it's not all nurture. There is an inherent nature to human beings, and unfortunately, that isn't always a good nature.
Indeedy duty. Our very special guest is Jason Burmist. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com on American Freedom Radio. We'll be right back. Final segment coming up. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly broadcasting on Rush 89 FM in Hamilton, brought to you in partnership with GuerrillaMedia.co.nz. Our very special guest joining us live from New York is Jason Burmist. Jason, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Hey, now we were talking over the break. Well, in fact, before we went to break, about the Zeitgeist thing, and in the video that I did promoting the premiere of it, we watched the very first screening of it in the world here in New Zealand, because, you know, we're just that far ahead of the game, and you know, I did make the critique about the peak oil and the denial of the existence of the New World Order conspiracy. I would think that it's very, very bad. You know, are they doing it for PR, or are they just that silly that they don't see it? You know, it's totally undeniable when you look at the evidence, when you look at George W. Bush's speeches, when you look, in fact, who was it? Invisible Empire you did, wasn't it? That was basically, it was like an hour and a half straight up. And I watched this with my producer and we were just cracking up laughing for that whole hour and a half as every single clip of everybody saying New World Order and a hiking position of government power was just laid out there, man. It was so freaking hilarious.
Yeah, and I only used about one third of the video clips that I found. There were plenty of them out there that just didn't make it. And didn't make the end montage, because the end montage, which is just the credits rolling, I think you see another 60 or 70 New World Order quotes. And again, that was from a select base. I've done my homework. I went into this thinking, and then this is why I introed the movie this way, thinking that the New World Order was nothing but a conspiracy theory and Hulk Hogan's wrestling squad over at the WCW. And anybody who thought any different was out of their mind. And it wasn't until, you know, I saw Road to Tyranny on my awakening to 9/11 and heard this terminology, New World Order. And I didn't even want to hear that terminology. I thought Alex would have been better off using the term global elite. But as I started to do my homework, as I started to dig into the C-SPAN archives and the Vanderbilt archives, it became undeniable that there was this movement towards a centralized one world government, and their terminology for it was the New World Order. And this wasn't just the dream child of George H.W. Bush. And that's why I made that film. I made that film to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that a New World Order does exist. It is a, I guess you would call, a progressive idea of the globalists, which they're working towards. And people need to realize they're not working towards it in a benevolent manner. And, you know, as far as the Zeitgeist crew goes, I think that they're playing politics. I think that they see the fact that, you know, they're going to be able to get more mainstream support if they don't talk about the kind of subject matter that I talk about. But I also believe that in their heart of hearts, they believe that a, you know, centralized society is the way to go. And I just differ on that opinion. I don't know how you can create a centralized one world society where you get rid of the complete monetary system and base all your decisions off of a computer. I maybe my mind is just too small and that's what they're going to argue. But I can't see it coming into a real reality of existence. And I think that the steps needed to move this type of an idea forward could be very dangerous to humanity in general. But again, you know, I'm not here to knock the guy's work. I think that a lot of the stuff in there of the alternative technologies, it makes sense. I think that we do need to come together as a people and demand that we start using maglev trains and alternative sources of energy, but not because I believe in peak oil, but because I believe that it will stop the stranglehold that big oil and its corporatocracy behind it has on not only the American people, but the world. But they have that stranglehold for a reason. They're not letting us have these technologies for a reason. And I don't think that they're ever going to roll these technologies out to the masses unless they're in control of them. And I think that's an inherent problem with the arguments made by the Zeitgeist Productions.
One of my big sort of, other than the peak oil, which I definitely don't agree with, I mean, if you look at the work of Lindsay Williams, for example, just blows that right out of the water, not to mention Forbes magazine has now admitted that the United States has more oil in the ground than the whole of the Middle East combined. suppressed energy technologies. I mean, look at Nikola Tesla's work. He had come up with some incredible technology, free energy, wirelessly, things of that nature. And until you address suppressed energy technologies, you know, free energy, you know, it doesn't really matter whether or not you're going for wind or solar or any of these other things, because they're probably the least efficient ways of getting energy for free. And these technologies have been around for a very long time. And another thing that really got me is that the Zeitgeisters still believe in the phony climate change movement as well. But, you know, you can't win them all. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, it's on the points that we agree that we come together and we collaborate and and I still support Zeitgeist because I agree with many of the things in the films, but I'm never a member of any group for that matter. You know, I wouldn't want to belong to any group that would have me as a member.
Well, I always tell people to check out all the information out there. Please take a look at it, but just don't believe everything blindly. You have to have something called discernment. Discernment is the key. Does this make sense in a real world scenario? Does this argument make sense when I hear the opposing view and the points on that opposing view? And I hope, you know, I hope people look at my work and they don't just take it, you know, all in stride and say, yep, he nailed it. There it is. He got it all right. Because I remember, again, when I had first come across Road to Tyranny, and the first thing that came across my mind is I'm going to prove this Texas redneck wrong. And I started to go into Oklahoma City thinking that I was going to find things that contradicted what was in that film. And I only found things that supported that film even further. So I tell people, get out there, do your own research. If people want to check me out, they can do so at youtube.com/JasonJustice911 or facebook.com/JasonBurmis.
All right. Thank you very much for coming on the show with us today, Jason Burmis, and may you be effective, as we all know that you can be in the future, for saving humanity from the New World Order scumbag elite.
Thanks, Benny. Great show.
All right, there he goes, ladies and gentlemen. Jason Burmis, I would recommend, if you haven't seen it already, and I don't know why you're listening to the show if you haven't, check out Loose Change and Invisible Empire and all of the great films there. Man, so glad to have him on the show. All right, and coming up next hour, we're going to have more news, and also, hopefully, we might... Number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. Whew! Man, that was an awesome interview with Jason Burmis. Oh, yeah. I like that. Now, on to some more news from GorillaMedia.co.nz. Those of you who are very fond of watching documentaries and getting your news online, this will certainly amuse you. Obama may get power to shut down internet without court oversight. Oh, the censorship. A bill giving the president an internet kill switch during times of emergency that failed to pass Congress last year will return this year. And it's just the exact same thing that the New World Order slimebags always do. If it doesn't work 1 year, we'll try it the next one once everybody's forgotten about it, because conveniently everybody's got the memory of a gold fish. But with a revision that has many civil liberties advocates concerned, it will give the president, Barack H.O. Barry, the ability to shut down parts of the internet without any court oversight. That's, of course, going to be very, very handy for everybody who wants to get any description of information that the government doesn't want out. And I love the names that they give these bills. The Protecting Cyberspace as a National Asset Act. If you have a look at the names of any bills, basically try and think about what the exact opposite of what that name is. Like, for example, the Patriot Act is the Destroy America Act. The Urban Tranquility Program is the Put Everybody Into Prison-Like Cities Program. You know what I'm saying? And this was introduced last year by Senator Joe Lieberman. Oh, isn't he a lovely fella? And Susan Collins, in an effort to combat cybercrime and the threat of online warfare and terrorism, which the intelligence agencies run most of it. Critics said the bill would allow the president to disconnect internet networks and force private websites to comply with broad cybersecurity measures, i.e. saying that there's only 1,000 approved websites and everybody else is going to be shut the F down. Future US presidents would have these powers renewed indefinitely. And, you know, and this is the thing. It's about carrying the ball for the team. Like we said on the show countless times, the government, presidents, whatever the F you want to call them, varied scum, prime sinisters, whatever, they're all playing on the same frickin' team. When one of them goes out, don't think that it's the end of the agenda. He's just passing a ball to another person in the team, and they are still running towards the goalpost. And believe me when I tell you, they will score unless you tackle them all at once. And, you know, for them to score is for us to lose out in any rational sense of the word. And, you know, I cannot, under any circumstances, bow down to this type of thing, you know, because I actually care about my country. I don't even just care about my country. I care about my people, and I care about all the people of this world. You know why? Because everything that happens to me happens to them, and vice versa. We're all in this together. We're all having a huge tyrannical system being brought down on us, and unless we stand up and fight together, not fight one another, we will lose. And losing means death or tyranny. Give me liberty or give me death. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Vinny Eastwood Show. Bill on AmericanFreedomRadio.com.
Thought about doing some description of operatic performance, but no. Oh, mate. I just love organized crime. Oh, yeah. It's so good. Especially when it's run by the government. Now, speaking of which, I was just wondering something. Does organized crime exist without government support? I would bet not. You know, like, for example, in New Zealand, we've got this, false flag sort of, you know how media commentators, they always look at these particular groups as these schisms of wider problems and as a good reason to suppress all of our rights, you know, like gangs, for example, in New Zealand, you know, there's I don't know, maybe a couple of hundred, maybe even a couple of thousand at tops of gang members in this country dealing drugs and, you know, being generally violent. You know, they're gang members. What do you expect? But the answer to this is not let's use the police and just raid them and shut them down because they're criminals. The answer is, let's pass legislation so that they can't wear gang patches which identify them as gang members. Am I the only one that seems this is just a little bit retarded? Maybe I am. You know, we pick the fleas off the back of a flea-infested dog instead of putting the puppy down. It's just ridiculous. You know, and, you know, meanwhile, we've got things like this internet kill switch bill that's threatening to shut down freedom of speech, you know, and people will say, oh, well, but we've still got the media, you know, there's good people out there in the media that are doing good jobs. Yeah, well, those people don't get any frickin' proper mainstream media coverage, do they, sir? Okay, the internet is the answer to all of the BS that we get funneled through the mainstream media, all right? Speaking of which, article in here from Guerrilla Media, British PM dines with Murdoch secretly. the Prime Minister has held a secret dinner with James Murdoch amid the government's attempt to decide on the Murdoch media empire after a flurry of resignations and dismissals over telephone hacking at Murdoch's News of the World and his bid to buy B Sky B, the Daily Independent reported. The Labour opposition questioned whether Cameron had broken the ministerial code of conduct by meeting the chairman of News Corp in Europe and Asia. Well, of course he did. Well, no, no. In fact, no, he didn't. You know why? Because there's no such thing as conduct, you know? Seriously. And this is the thing that I really hate about New Zealand. I love my country, but God, I hate it sometimes. We have no, and let me just tell you this, and I am not joking, there is no code of conduct for New Zealand politicians. None whatsoever. There are no rules that you can break. None. WTF. I mean, come on. You'd figure that people who have ridiculous amounts of power relative to, say, the average citizen on the street would have some description of checks and balances on them. But no! Not the government. The government's never done anything wrong. They've never passed draconian legislation. They've never sold off state assets to the lowest bidder. They've never sold out sovereignty of the country to international banks. They've never surveilled the people without warrants. They've never lied to the people. Oh, wait. Yes, they have. And in fact, that would probably be what I would consider the modus operandi. Cameron's secret meeting with James comes only a few days after the Premier stripped Vince Cable, the Lib Dem business secretary, of the power to decide whether News Corp should be allowed to buy the 61% of B Sky B it does not already own. The government was also under an all-party pressure over its links with Murdoch, despite last week's resignation of Andy Coulson, the Downing Street Director of Communications, over the continuing controversy about telephone hacking at Murdoch's News of the World, which cost Coulson his job as the paper's editor in 2007. Simon Hughes, the Liberal Democrats' deputy leader, was expected to pursue legal action against News International over his phone being hacked rather than accept an out-of-court settlement. He told the Commons last September that while he defended freedom of the press, this phone hacking is abuse and illegality. It has to end, but we must be robust about it. The Independent revealed that Cameron met James Murdoch at the Oxfordshire home of Rebecca Brooks. Now, isn't it funny? Isn't there some description of law in the United States? I believe it's called the Logan Act, where a government official is not allowed to meet other government officials or big corporate power brokers without the approval of Congress. But it keeps happening anyway. And even when they're caught out, for example, going to Bilderberg Group meetings, nothing happens. And even if the media does report on them, as Russia Today has done on various Bilderberg Group meetings, nothing happens either. Isn't it just the most frustrating thing you can ever deal with? Now, I've been speaking with a guy named Chris Wingate. Now, I'm not sure if any of you are familiar with him, but Google him, man. He's a pretty awesome dude. Basically, the idea here is that our politicians are not accountable to the words of the people. Okay? Anybody who doesn't believe this, you're wrong. They're certainly not accountable. All right? Period. And the reason why they're not accountable is because, like I said, A1, there's no code of conduct, and B2, there is no way for people to actually pull them up. Like, for example, you can't take a judge or a politician to court over lying or not answering a question or anything like that. It's called parliamentary and judicial immunity. This is the reason why our society is able to be run cloak and dagger-like, of course, without any description of, stink being kicked up to any great significance that would actually lead to any description of meaningful change. Okay? Now, what he's done here, and if you can Google May 1st Idiots in Power protest at Parliament in New Zealand on May the 1st, which is a satanic holiday, also incidentally International Workers' Day. I'm sure that's just a coincidence. gathering at Parliament to get something called a constitutional jury system. Right? Now, what this allows you to do is, and I've done this many, many times, you go and you ask a politician a question, shove a camera in their face. Previously, the best I can hope for is to videotape one of three reactions. Either A1, they dodge the question, which means they're dodgy. They lie, which means they're dodgy. Or they tell the truth, which means they're an ally. Okay? Enemy, enemy, ally. Those are the three reactions that you get. Now, under this new system of constitutional juries, you, in fact, will be able to then hold them to account. If they don't answer your question, then you go to a constitutional jury. You know, you give them 60 minutes in front of them and say, and you might state your case and you say, this is why they have to answer this question, because they're in a fiduciary position, okay? They're acting under the public trust, and if they violate that trust by dodging questions, lying, or not fulfilling their duties to the fullest extent possible, then we can suspend them, okay? And I'm not talking about, like, fire them or anything like that. You just take their pay away and say that they can't go back to work in Parliament until they rectify the situation. That is a citizens-initiated way of holding politicians to account, which has not happened before anywhere in any country in the entire world. I can assure you, have a look and see if there are any places where the people can hold their governments to account. They can't, because they've got these things called parliamentary sovereignty and immunity. If we can wipe that out, okay, and this is the real important point here. If you can withdraw their immunity, it means that they then serve you again, okay? Like they were supposed to. In fact, I wouldn't say serve you again, because I would really, hasten to guess that no parliament has ever truly served their people, at least not in my lifetime. And, you know, I'm 26, so conceivably, at some point in time, maybe a law or a parliament has been passed to do something good. But every time I see this world change, it's always a change for the worse, you know. And I'm not an elderly activist or anything like that. I'm a young guy who just pays a modicum of attention because I care, and that's the difference. If you care, you become very, very dangerous to the establishment, namely because you're not willing to play partisan politics. Right? If you play partisan politics, it means that what you're really doing is saying, okay, I'm perfectly okay with being slapped with the left hand rather than the right hand. You're still getting slapped, you dumbass. Come on. I'm the only one who's not okay with this. I'm certainly not the one who's isolated in these thought processes. Anybody who has tracked government in any government, all right, seriously, I'm talking about a broad spectrum of politics here. Every nation on this earth has had politicians that lie, okay? Politicians alongside used car salesmen, according to an article released not too long ago, are among the least trusted professions on earth. Now, would you elect used car salesmen to rule your life? No, but we sure as heck elect politicians. Politicians who dodge questions. Politicians who just don't give an F about you. They don't give an F about you. You know, but I don't want to tar them all with a brush. There are some good people in Parliament, all right? Don't get me wrong. And they do fight, but I can assure you that they are in the severe minority and they have a limit to the effectiveness that they can wield against whatever description of draconian legislation that the government's passing next. You know, I would venture a guess that perhaps if you are elected into government, you are merely the good apple jumping into the bad barrel, and it only becomes a matter of time before you become the very evil that you seek to destroy. That's my opinion, and I could be wrong. Maybe that's the reason why I haven't gotten into politics. Maybe it's because I can talk about anything that I want outside of politics. Maybe that's the reason why I support activists, because they have no such party loyalty. They can say whatever they want, and nobody can fire them. Nobody can launch Broadcasting Standards Authority complaints against them. Nobody can do anything. They're free, in other words. But I would consider, of course, that the people rising up, as it were, is something that we should endeavour to propagate. And that's what I try to do with this radio show because, you know, in New Zealand, we don't have any decent truther shows. It's sad but true. And I'm not saying that, you know, I'm so great or whatever for doing this. I mean, mate, I'm just doing what I'm doing to serve my country and my people. Okay, that's it. All right, I'm an egotistical ex-salesman with a big mouth, period. Okay, I'm not the source you should look to so much as the people that we invite on this show. Okay, I understand that my opinion doesn't carry a terribly large amount of weight because I'm not 50 years old and have truckloads of experience under my belt with doing all this research. I don't do a terribly large amount of research. I just interview the researchers. And that way, I get the benefit of all of their experience. And you, as the listeners of the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will, get to benefit from their experience as well. You see what I'm saying? This way we can jump the gun and we can wake people up in an exponential fashion by sharing that knowledge and that research amongst each other. And I'm very, very grateful, of course, to the amazing listeners that we have for this show. You know, I'm getting messages all the time on Facebook and whatnot, people complimenting the show, people wanting to help out, that kind of thing. And if you do want to help out the show, just go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, go to the contact part, and just underneath it, it'll drop down. There's a little help out page. Because we've had a lot of offers for help. But the difficulty is, I've had hundreds of offers for help, and virtually none of those hundreds of offers of help has resulted in any. You know, it's a situation where activism itself has gotten, I don't know, perhaps diluted is the word, is it? Because there's three stages to truth, as people should well know. First is ridicule, and the second being being violent opposition, and the third being accepting the truth as self-evident. But following on from that, there's another three stages: becoming overwhelmed by the truth. And believe me, I've shed a few tears, and I've experienced bouts of depression going through these sort of changes. It's almost like the body and the brain are trying to catch up to reality, and as a result, you need to shed your skin like a snake. So being overwhelmed by it, then, after you've experienced the overwhelming, then you need to wonder about what can I do about it. And it has to be an I statement. You can't look to anybody else to provide any solutions for you, in my opinion, because you will be far more effective once you take action, which is the third stage, if you're taking action on an individual basis. Okay? Because then you have the power. Okay, the power can't be taken away from you because you've earned it. You've gone through the process. You've experienced the ridicule. You've experienced the opposition. And you've become aware of just how powerful you are, that you can survive all of that and keep going anyway. Right? Now, I've pretty much stopped following most other things after starting this radio show, because I woke up to the thing that escaped me for so long, that I am the solution and I am a powerful and divine creator and nothing can stop me, right? Everybody needs to get to that realization. And I'm not sure if you can just jump the gun and go straight to that realization. Maybe you do have to go through the processes first. but I think that everything should be happening much, much faster than it is. I have a difficulty accepting status quo because I don't accept it. And nor should you. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will, AmericanFreedomRadio.com and TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com. We'll be right back momentarily after the fabulous Jimi Hendrix is finished. There really is nowhere to run and nowhere to hide from a world. And don't we all know it? And I think that's the cool thing about having a New World Order conspiracy. And, you know, I know for a fact that it's true, but let's say for argument's sake that it's not. The benefits of thinking about a New World Order conspiracy is that you realize that the entire world has one group of enemies. Elite bankers with all their subgroups and organizations and corporations and that kind of thing, which can be readily identified, provided you look at them, and therefore they can be readily resisted. Okay, one of the interesting things I find about humanity and the concept of resistance in itself is that some people find it difficult to figure out who the enemy truly is. You know, like, for example, there's some people have accused me and Will of being the enemies, you know, NWO agents and things of this nature, and which is just patently insane, with no evidence to back it up, of course. And I think that ego, on the other hand, can result relatively strongly on these. You know, and as a radio show host, as a former salesman, I have to admit that I have an ego. Okay, and now one of the challenges with that that I've overcome is realizing it. If you understand you've got an ego, then you can go about certain things to correct it. You know, I had this conversation with Jack Blood when I first launched the show. That manipulation is manipulation, and I picked no bones about it. This show is manipulation. You know, somebody can manipulate a pen to write a wonderful artwork, or they can manipulate a person to hate another. But it's still manipulation. And I see it as I see myself as the bad guy, right, so that I don't actually turn into one. Whereas people who have egos that consider themselves the good guy wind up becoming the bad guy, right? Isn't that interesting? Checks and balances are something that you need to apply on yourself prominently. Because if you don't, the consequences can be absolutely disastrous. Speaking of absolute disasters, New Zealand asset sales plan rehashing failed policies is by our Phil Goff. Those of you who don't know who Phil Goff is, he's the leader of the Labour Party, the second part of the wing of false dichotomy that we have in New Zealand. A government proposal to partially sell off state-owned assets will result in higher power prices and cuts to services, the Labour Party says, which is pretty frickin' obvious because every time that any power company or any description of state asset has been sold off to offshore corporations, the cost for the people goes up, right? Now, anybody who's researched into, say, the World Bank, they had some white papers leaked about them saying that, hey, you know, it'd be a really good idea. Why don't we just make some money up out of thin air loan it to countries, and then put all these conditions on the loans that they have to sell all their state assets to companies that we either own or are heavily affiliated with, so that we can increase the prices, milk the whole country, and then use all the people's taxes in order to pay it back, and then put the interest rates up so high on our loans that they can't pay it back, and force the country into incremental receivership. More or less. That's me paraphrasing the white papers of the World Bank for you there. But the same thing has been happening in this country for a very long time. We used to have a thing called a Ministry of Works, where the government had a company that built the roads, the bridges, the dams, put up the power poles, things of this nature. And they're doing a pretty dang fine job of it. We used to have local councils, what we called borough councils, who would be responsible for their own small areas. It was a very localized government, and individuals within particular streets, it was their job as the representative for that street to keep an eye on everything that was going on. Like, for example, if the road starts to crack up, or if people's water pipes break, or anything that's of any significance which the local council works can fix up, and they then bring it up in the next council meeting, right? So that way, you have everybody taking care of everybody. No centralization, and it was working incredibly well. That was one of the things that the World Bank didn't like, because they don't want our nations to be independent. They don't want us to be accountable to the people. They don't want to care for each other in smaller communities. Period. And they will do everything within their power, which is quite considerable, to mess with it. Delivering a State of the Union, State of the Nation, sorry, put me a Freudian slip there, delivering his State of the Nation speech at Truss Stadium in West Auckland this morning, Prime Minister John Key said Mighty River Power, Meridian Genesis and Solid Energy were all being looked at for partial sale. And advice was also being sought on reducing Crown shares in Air New Zealand. Now, let me just talk basic economics for you. If you have an asset or a group of assets that earn you $700 million a year, as these ones do, do you think that you would make more money by selling them off and then buying the exact same services off private companies, or just keeping those assets and keep on the money rolling in? Mm-hmm. The answer is pretty freaking obvious. Unless, of course, you happen to believe in actual economic principles that are taught in universities, where these type of things aren't looked at as insane, they're looked at as economically beneficial. The proposal that was that part of a government plan to reduce debt and increase savings. Let me get this straight. You're going to increase our savings by cutting our income and reduce our debt by getting rid of the assets. Oh, the insanity. We need to look at where, the Prime Minister says, quote, we need to look at where we can change the mix of assets we own, identifying these new assets are most needed, and where we have more money invested than we absolutely need to. Well, how about, Mr. Key, you invest in perhaps a backed currency that isn't fiat? How about you invest in perhaps being able to make our own currency, instead of just loaning credit from international banksters like yourself? The government was considering extending the mixed ownership model, which is private corporation takeover model for Air New Zealand, which is owned predominantly by the government, but with a minority of outside equity to other companies. And of course, they always do this by incremental steps. You know, they're not just going to one day say, oh, well, you know, it makes economic sense to get rid of every single asset in the country and leave everybody on the street to die. No, of course not. They'll use things like, oh, it makes economic sense to do it just a little bit. And then the next election comes round, and conveniently we have a parliamentary dictatorship so that any prime sinister who gets an idea in his bald head to try and screw over the country, nothing can stop him. And, of course, under this model, quoting again, the government has a controlling stake in what is a crucial piece of transport infrastructure and guarantees that it will be majority New Zealand owned, but not owning 100% of the airline. And government also has the capital free to invest in other assets, like investing in international banks that are selling out the country. The government had asked Treasury for advice in the viability of introducing mixed ownership to the power companies, as well as on reducing government shares in New Zealand. And I can just imagine what Treasury said, considering every single new prime minister, well, I can't actually say this for 100% certain, but from 1984 through till 1996, I believe, every single prime minister has been approached by Treasury the very day that they take office saying, Prime Minister, there's a really, really bad economic situation that's been boiling in the background, and now we need to introduce all these austerity measures and cut spending and sell off all our assets and that kind of, basically World Bank takeover 101, you know, saying that it's an emergency and it was the previous government's fault. And, you know, being a young guy, I'm still conscious that every single time that we've had a new prime minister, they come out days after their policies have been delivered, saying, sorry, those policies won't work because the last government got us into a big economic situation, so now we need to F you all. Royally! Mr. Key said the government would also be looking to cut spending by lowering their spending allowance from $1.1 billion to about $800 to $900 million. Labour leader Phil Goff said that the plans were a recipe for disaster. Well, of course they're a recipe for disaster. Who is the chef in all of this? Hocking off our assets to foreign buyers and slashing spending is vintage National. It doesn't have an economic plan, so it's simply rehashing the failed policies of the past. Policies, of course, which Labour implemented in the first place in 1984, thanks to Roger, if you're happy and you know it, clap your hands, Douglas! Mr. Goff said low and middle income earners were ignored in Mr. Key's tax plan and were going to suffer more if assets were sold off. Well, call me a blimmin' news flash artist. Now they'll face cuts to health and education, and they'll pay through the nose to heat their homes once National sells off our power companies to foreign investors, as we're already doing because the power companies up the prices all the time, especially during winter months when there's more rainfall, where the where our hydroelectric dams are able to produce more power, so they up the prices because everybody needs to heat their homes. Effing scumbags. And on top of that, we got all these frickin' carbon taxes, which are going to be increased incrementally as well. Are we insane? Why is anybody voting for any of these two sellout blimmin' political parties? I figure, why is anybody voting at all? You know? I believe it was Mark Twain that said, I would never vote because that would only encourage them. It is socially, ethically, and morally wrong to impose the sorts of cuts he's proposing on society after having given away billions to the country's most wealthy via tax cuts, of course, which, of course, the tax increases and borrowing through international banks paid for. Green Party co-leader Russell Norman was also quick to condemn the government's proposal, saying the gloves had come off and National's true plan for the country was being unveiled. And I've sent a message to Mr. Norman asking him if he'll come on the show to discuss this. I haven't received no reply as yet, and I'll still keep you updated on that. John Key's speech shows a swing to the right, swings to fascism more like, and signals National's plan to privatise state assets in the next term, Mr. Norman said. Selling state assets to foreign corporations, which will inevitably happen under this plan, will drive up the current account deficit, send profits overseas, and drive up costs for Kiwis, which is the plan. Council of Trade Unions economist Bill Rosenberg said the plan would cause more problems than it would solve. In fact, it won't solve any. It'll just cause a whole bunch of new ones. And guess who's going to have to pick up the tab? That's right. You, the taxpayer. You, the tax slave. You, the tax debtor. Whatever you want to call yourself now. Understanding that we don't actually have any freedoms because they just keep getting taken off us. The second they don't like what we're doing with them is not freedom. However, Business New Zealand Chief Executive Phil O'Reilly welcomed the plan, saying it would broaden the investment opportunities for New Zealanders. Right, investment opportunities for New Zealanders, considering there are none, because every single frickin' possibility of any description of economic wealth that we had in this country, like manufacturing or training people how to like manufacture tools, for example, or anything that really creates any real wealth, has already been privatized and taken overseas. And he says that the solution for this is to privatize and take them overseas. Oh, it hurts me in my brain places. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will, AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. We'll be right back. Final segment coming up. The way it's going to be. Yes, we are jamming a monkey wrench into the gears of corruption. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, Rush 89 FM in Hamilton, and the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz. And a comment here. Those of you who participate in the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will Ryan Facebook group, thank you very much, you know, because there's so much people actually posting on that stuff. I can't believe it. But during the show each day, we have a chat running. And for those of you who are members of the group who get the chat popping up all the time, don't worry. It only happens for the 2 hours that the show's actually running. But had a comment in here. And, wow, I think Barry Obama Nation's State of the Union was written by the same speechwriter. I wouldn't say it was written by the same speechwriter, but certainly propagandized by the same friggin' scum to justify it. You know, it's the exact same thing, isn't it? This is the reason why Americans and New Zealanders and Aussies and people from the UK and Canadians can all really feel nice and snuggly together, because we're all being shafted by the same exact type of scum. And, I use the word scum operatively, you know, because, that's exactly what they are, okay? They are parasitical organisms that are sucking the life out of liberty, sucking the life out of our country, depriving us of all our assets. Basically, they're taking us out. You know, this is a war, ladies and gentlemen. And at the moment, humanity's losing that war. The tide is turning, though. Every day, I see more evidence of people getting shafted. And at the same time, I see more evidence of people rising up. Every single friggin' day. Fills me with a lot of hope. Oh, yes, it does. Hey, because after all, hope and change isn't something that politicians just use and lie to you with, because let's face facts here, whenever any new politician or political party, regardless of whether or not they've been in power before or later or during or whatever the F, they always, always campaign on that frickin' platform of change. Isn't that interesting? And isn't it even more interesting that it never changes? And isn't it even more interesting that the next time that they campaign against each other, they still campaign on change and people fall for it again? Oh, the aspartame. No, but seriously, though. You couldn't really expect a whole bunch of people that are just dumbed down on a whole bunch of Fruit Loop type economic policies and you know, with a terrible diet, drinking Coca-Cola like it was God's own water juice, to actually be capable of really any actual thought. Can you? You know? And I apologize for being aggro. It's just like, you know, I see my country and my people and everybody all around the world being enslaved somewhat ruthlessly, and very few, and I'm not saying that that's a bad thing, people are rising to challenge the system itself. However, we can shut down the enemy techniques. For example, another article in here from Guerrilla Media, KiwiGate, the final chapter. Those of you who have not heard of KiwiGate, our National Institute of Water and Atmospheric Research, NIWA, released a document in 2009 with a whole bunch of data entitled, Are We Feeling Warmer Yet? Now, basically, they put all their climate data recorders next to air ventilation ducts where all the hot air gets blown out. And then they said, oh, New Zealand's warming. And then they added it to the IPCC, and everybody goes, oh, goodness sake, now we need carbon taxes to solve the problem, which doesn't solve the problem at all. It just destroys your economy and destroys human society. Isn't that fabulous? Conveniently, though, NIWA has now made the huge admission that New Zealand has experienced hardly any warming during the last half century. For all their talk about it, for all their rushed invention of the 11-station series to prove warming, this new series shows that no warming has occurred here since about 1960. Almost all the warming took place from 1940 to when the IPCC says that the effect of CO2 concentrations was trivial. Indeed, global temperatures were falling during that period. The dishonesty behind the original data was in the adjustments, of course. Almost all of the 34 adjustments made by Dr. Jim Salinger to the 7SS have been abandoned, along with his version of the comparative station methodology. It's garbage in, garbage out. When you're basing policy on junk science, as the vast majority of governments do, because they're junk governments, of course. You know, Ronald McDonald would do a better job of running this country than John Key, I'd wager. Because he's also a fictional character. University of Otago Pro Vice Chancellor of Sciences Keith Hunter has also asked, or has also backed NIWA, saying taking court action against it was stupid, while the Environmental Defence Society, EDS, said it may join court action in support of NIWA. Now, see, this is the thing. If you have people in respectable positions, you know, like scientists and things of that nature, supporting fraud, things that are actively proven to be frauds, and they support it anyway, doesn't that make those scientists fraudulent? One of the points in Zeitgeist 3, which I admit is a very, very good film, I liked it a lot, it says that science has no ego, but scientists do, okay? Fraud is the secret sauce that holds it together. Seriously. Junk science has been around since day dot, as far as I know, and you can use it to justify pretty much anything that you want. If you want to justify, for example, exterminating a race of people, you get scientists to say, oh, those race of people are genetically inferior. Or you can just say that, hey, the climate is being warmed by too many people and it's really dangerous. So now we need to tax the living daylights out of life and watch you all die in the gutters. I'm not keen to tell you the truth. And it is about frickin' time that we stop listening to them. We debate them, knowing that every word that comes out of their mouth in their defense is a lie. But we still keep debating them because they will not shut up. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will. We'll be back tomorrow with more news.